Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 18, delivered on October 29, 2015. The title of this lecture is Measuring Expected Return and Volatility.
Today, Expected Return and Volatility. This is actually kind of a mop-up lecture and going over some topics that have been done before, but there's also some new material. At least for this course, you've seen these mathematical formulas before. You've probably even used them. You probably hope that you would never see them again, but here they are. Now, one thing I will tell you about doing the math formulas is that they can get to the point where they're a little tedious, and you can make a mistake just because you're not watching. Lord knows I can do that, too. It's probably a good idea when you're doing the quiz or the test to have Excel available to you, or a good calculator like a TI 83 or 84, so that you can do these calculations a little more quickly than you might otherwise do them. If I could find, and did they indeed, have they taken my dry erase markers again? Seriously? Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. God, that rotates my ass. You know, I ought to do that. Well, I wonder if, actually, maybe I will do this just so you can see it in Excel. I could do one of these problems in Excel and show you how the formulas are deployed in a standard spreadsheet. Now, TI-83 can also do this too. You just lay in the data and then tell it what you want, and it should be able to do the same thing. I'm not sure if that Pearson Financial Calculator can do this. I think it can, but I've never used it, honestly, for this kind of a calculation. But what I'll do is I'm going to lay out two different formulas. One of the formulas has to do with, is there some reason this sucks? I just launched it and it didn't do anything. Okay, let's try it now. Okay. Actually, here's what I'm going to do starting off. I'm going to put a piece of paper up here and I'm going to write on this piece of paper here for a few minutes. Let me kill a couple of lights here, and then I can do this kind of more efficiently. The first thing that I want to show you are two formulas. One of the formulas is for average return on an investment. You could calculate over a historical period the annual return that you had on, let's say, some kind of a portfolio. Now, the one that the book shows you, and I will tell you right now that this is actually done kind of as a quick back-of-the-envelope method in practice, but it's not the best in the world. And I've shown you some better ones, and I'll bring them up again real quickly here. But if you're all you matter, if what you want to do is just find the average return on an investment over a period of N years, and you got the annual return each of those N years, then the formula that you would use for the average return, and we would mark that as an R with a bar over the top of it, and I'm going to write this as a formula, 1 over N times the sum from I equals 1 to N. Is there some reason why this is doing weird things on me? It just popped over there. It just switched over there. There, thank you. I would have just kept going there. The R sub I's. This is a fancy way of writing add them up and divide by the number of data points. But it looks so cool when you put it in your notes this way and just kind of casually leave them open to show your friends who are majoring in art how butch you are. I shouldn't do that. Yes, I should. Okay. It's just add them up and divide by the number of data points. It's an average. For your return, and this would be each of your annual returns. Okay? Nothing big about that. Now, the next one is the standard deviation. This measures the center of the expected of your returns over the historical period. Now, the next one measures the dispersion of those returns. And this is the one that is associated with risk of a security. Now, remember that risk actually has two flavors, the risk that you can get rid of and the risk that you can't get rid of. But this is an overall measure of the risk. And it would depend upon these returns. What it would do is it would start with how much of the diversifiable risk had you gotten rid of in the portfolio that was generating these returns, these R sub I's. In other words, if you had a well-diversified portfolio to start with, all that would be in that is the market risk, the risk that you should expect a reward for. So the standard deviation that you got, the dispersion, would be a good measure of the non-diversifiable volatility. But if this is just one stock over year over year over year, then this volatility measure is just going to be have all kinds of risk in it that you would have been able to get rid of. But anyway, look. First things first is that what you're going to do is you're going to take the standard deviation is going to be the square root of this mess, 1 over the number of data points minus 1. Minus 1 because this is a sample. If you had the population, which you never would have in a data analysis, probably, it would be 1 over n, but in this case it's 1 over n. And then you take the sum from I equals 1 to n. In other words, each of the data points, you're going to take the individual data point minus how far, minus the expected value, and you're going to square it. In other words, you take each data point minus the average, square it, and then you add up those that mess. Then you divide by the number of data points minus 1, and you take the square root. Like I said, you probably saw this in that stats class that you had to take before this, but here it is again. This is our way of measuring volatility overall. Now, what I would do with this, I mean, if you want to pound it out, yeah, it's okay with 3 or 4 or 5 data points maybe, but once you get up to 10, 50, 1,000, this gets to be way too much like work to do either of these. That's why we would bring in a real-life situation, an Excel spreadsheet to do this. Probably wouldn't even use a calculator. Okay. I'm going to lay out some returns here. I'm going to lay out 10 years of returns here for you, if I can see my own writing here. Negative 0.198. We're going to do year return. And I'm doing this, I did it right before class, but I cleared that out so I could show you. I think it's better if you see me doing it, see me possibly even making a mistake or two. 1, 2. And I'm going to span that out for 10 years. Okay. Return. Now I'm going to go take these straight through, negative 0.198, excuse me, 0.168 for the second year's return, 17.7%, yep, for the third year's, negative 49.5%, 0.495, 43.1%, 1.4%, negative 0.168, 0.458, 0.453, negative 0.035. Oops, I screwed that up, didn't I? Yeah. Okay, and let me format these to percentages. I can't even read my own writing here. Number, percentage. Good enough. Close enough for government work. Okay, now, these would be year-over-year returns on this, on a portfolio, let's say. Now, first impressions. Adam, if you're looking at that portfolio, would you say that that is a low volatility portfolio or a high volatility portfolio? Just gut.
Low.
Okay. You went from nearly a 50% negative return to a nearly 50% positive return over a period of 1 year. That would be a high volatility portfolio. An extraordinarily high volatility. This is the kind of portfolio that makes you want to wear a diaper every time you look at the trading screens. And I do understand if you're not used to this, there's not really much of a gut sense. But just kind of looking at that, my first impression is, yeehaw. I probably would not be in a portfolio that whipped around like this. Now, a couple of metrics that I'm going to do here is I'm going to do the average return and then I'm going to do the standard deviation. Spread this, open this up a bit here. Now, the average return is obviously in Excel just equals average over the life of the portfolio, these 10 years. There you go. It's an 8.05% expected return. In other words, you would expect this portfolio in any given year to land at about 8% return on you. But notice that the reality of this historical data tells you that your expectation could be wildly off. Matter of fact, there's not really even one year's return there that's near 8%. That gives you an idea of what risk does. It fuzzes up your ability to analyze, to predict, to know. Now, the standard deviation, STDEV, by the way, if you are going to actually have a population of data, like I said, that would be very unusual in this kind of data analysis. You would do STDEV.P instead of just STDEV. But in this case, STDEV, open parenthesis, and then give it the data that you want, and then finish it. I forgot to say equals. Equals talking and chewing gum at the same time. Try that again. There you go. Now that, by the way, is a percentage as well. Format it to a percentage at 2 decimal places. That measures dispersion. Now, let me get this down to real use. What does this give you? What does this buy you? If you are to assume that the returns in the background are normally distributed, in other words, like a bell curve, What that standard deviation tells you, it can tell you a lot of things, but one of the things that kind of is like a touchstone in our business is that it tells you that 95% of the time, your returns would lie between R bar minus twice that standard deviation and R bar plus twice that standard deviation. About 95% of the time, it's going to be somewhere between the average minus two standard deviations and the average plus two standard deviations. What that means in this portfolio, just to give you a view of what happens. Again, cautioning, notice that this is a wildly volatile portfolio. So what we would look at is that the 95% confidence interval would be somewhere the average minus twice that up to, seriously, up to the, let me do the other one, the equals the average plus twice that standard deviation. Now let me clean these two up. What did I just do there? I just overwrote it. Okay. Let me do the average equals the average. Sorry about that. Minus, kind of don't want to do too much of this tedious stuff. Okay, so now let me clean these two up. Format those down to two decimal places. No, I don't want 15 decimal places. There. That'll give you a better idea. Really? Okay, that's a little bit better. Well, that doesn't tell you a whole hell of a lot. In this portfolio, because your standard deviation, your spread, your dispersion, your volatility is so great, it doesn't really tell you much. Yeah, 95% of the time you're going to lose between losing 55.5% to getting 72, almost 72%. Well, that doesn't tell you a whole lot. And that's the problem when you have the higher risk, the higher volatility is you're 95% confident of not a whole lot. Now, if that standard deviation was tighter, you would definitely have more useful information. But in this case, you know, there you go. It's not telling you a whole lot. But that's part of the game of risk. The greater the risk, yes, the greater the expected return. But also, that greater risk has as part of its risk is how blind you are going forward. This portfolio swings around a lot. Well, I can say, yeah, on average, I made 8%. I'll make 8%. But, you know, what does that tell you when you got such a massive dispersion? Any given year, you could be king of the world, or you could take a butt bath in this one. That's a technical term, by the way. Anyway. That's the idea of what we use these average return and the expected and the standard deviation for in real life. I'm going to take that off the board now. Make a note to you that is very close to one of your test questions. That's almost the test question itself, just to help you along a little bit. Wait, could you put that back up there? No. Now, I'm going to show you something. Let me show you something here. I'm going to bring up, again, I hate doing this, but I always do, use Yahoo Finance. Let's talk, get the theory and the math are hugely important. but it does you no good if it does you can't articulate it into your professional life and also into your personal personal investing life. Here's the thing. There was a big piece of news earlier this week about a certain company that was going to acquire another certain company. Anyone know what I'm talking? Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Yeah. Walgreens. What was it going to grab? Rite Aid. So, in other words, what we have going on is a classic scenario where we can see revaluation of a stock of a company. Now, Rite Aid is Walgreens. Okay. Why would this be good for as an investment? What? There were three competitors, biggies. There's Walgreens, there's Rite Aid. Who's the third? Does anyone know?
CVS.
Bingo, absolutely. Now, taking those three together, if you've noticed in most medium, even large cities, every corner has one of these on it. There's a Walgreens at every intersection, or a CVS, or a Rite Aid. They are essentially, each of them has very high prices compared to what you would get at a Walmart. So why do people go to a place that has high prices? Why are these Walgreens popping up? Why are these CVS's, Rite Aid's popping up everywhere if they sell at such high prices compared to big box competitors? What's the advantage? Got it? Got any idea? Yes, convenience. It's purely convenience. You can go there 24/7 and grab that that test kit to make sure that you don't have any marijuana in you before the interview tomorrow, and the peacup thing. If you got the if in the middle of the night you have like a slasher come in and cut you up, you can run over to CVS and grab some alcohol and some snacks. I mean, you got to eat after you've bled, protein and all, but. The thing of it is that they have been a successful business model. And there's also another thing. Do you remember from your economics? I don't actually honestly know if they taught you, emphasized this, but it's a hugely important point. And it drove the early legislation against monopolies. Because monopolies, by virtue of their market power, have one very nasty feature about them. Do you remember what it was? Yeah. Bingo. They have market power, so they produce at a lower output level, which means that they capture at a higher price on the demand curve than perfect competition. In other words, the classic model of price forming where supply and demand come together, that is not what happens in a monopoly. It is where the marginal cost curve, the supply curve, meets the marginal revenue curve, which is underneath the demand curve when the demand curve is downward sloping for a company. What that means is lower output, higher prices. And so, as market consolidation occurs, you begin to worry. Well, this is not good. That was why we had laws that tried to stop it. Now we don't even try to enforce those laws anymore. So if there are three competitors and you bring it down to two competitors, you are inevitably increasing the market power of the surviving two competitors. Well, let's talk first of all about Rite Aid. Have a look at its stock. Rite Aid is the target of the take. Wait, what? I did that wrong. Rite Aid. Why am I seeing this weird thing?
Is it a
huh? There might be. Yeah, why am I seeing this weird... Seriously, I'm so used to doing these on these fancy screens that I can't even do it. Aid. Oud. Yeah, right, Audi. Yeah, there it is. I wasn't even looking. Sorry, it's rad. Okay, now, Oh, Granny, quit that. What the hell? God, I hate these wiggling, twitching, farting things that get in your way. I'm an investment analyst. I don't want to see Granny waving for, I'm falling, I can't get up. Anyway. Oh, that was, that wasn't, yes it was. Anyway. Okay, now it's an interesting thing is because you can see, okay, let's talk first of all. What do you see about volatility? Now remember that this is, one thing that can blind you is the size of the price. Now, that if that were a $100 a share stock and I saw that, that's a very different, that same pattern would be a very different thing than that same, that pattern with an $8 stock. With an $8 stock, that's a lot of volatility. With a $100 stock, that would be hardly any volatility. So you always have to keep that in mind, that it's not really the levels, it's the percent changes from period to period. But right off the bat, you can see there is some volatility. But there was some optimism. Interestingly enough, notice that there was some buying pressure back early in the year, and that buying pressure did head and shoulders types of tricks. Those are, you see those peaks and those drops, those peaks and those drops, those are called head and shoulders patterns. And they're kind of, they're just a natural thing, but you always like to keep an eye on them. And you notice you had ascending tops. Do you see how that early neckline there in January through April, those were rising tops. But you notice that its next tests, it did a test in, looks like about June, and then it did another test of the neckline out there in maybe in August. You see it failed both times when it tested the neckline, the upstroke neckline. That would have told me right off the bat, there's bad news. There's bad news for this company. And that might have begun the process of inviting a predator or a friendly predator to save the company's bacon or something like that. Okay, here's what we've got going on now. Let's look at the return, a one-year return. Well, before I do that, first of all, notice the spike on the news. Yeah, Rite Aid's about to have its bacon saved. Rite Aid is about to have its bacon saved. What happened, though? I'm going to teach you a little bit here. What happened? It was the good news. And then something strange happened. It rose, and now where is it off its peak a couple of days ago when the news was released that it was going to be taken by Walgreens? It's dropped. Why did it drop? Anyone got any speculation as to why it dropped? I mean, good news. Walgreens is going to save Rite Aid. Rite Aid is still going to be in business. Let the good times roll. But then it turns south. Why would it do that? Any guess? Throw it out if you got an idea.
People expect it to go bad or to go belly up?
For the deal to go sour? Well, Walgreens is going to buy it, so it won't. Walgreens isn't going to let its investment go to hell. Walgreens' own shareholders would punish the company badly if that happened. Yeah?
Is it kind of like an IPO when the deal was announced, like the price kept driving up?
Yeah, and then now they're selling it off to the suckers. It was a sucker's run. It's a sucker's run. You let the news, you wait, if you're large, if you're a powerful company that does investment, a hedge fund, a trust, a big Wall Street boy, you'll wait for news like this. And then you will buy in on the upstroke, and then you'll just sit back and wait for the suckers to follow you in, which they did. See how the suckers just started following it in? And now the big dogs are throwing it out, handing it out. They've made their coin, and now they're going to dump. And the suckers, oh, I saw it go up. I'm going to hold on here, and they'll ride that dog right back down. It's not going to go clear down to where it was, but that's a sucker's rally right there. you just you rally in, and then you step back and let the momentum of the market pull that stock way up. Yeah, there's good news. I heard about it. I saw Wall Street boys are buying. I saw it on my trading screens. The buying activity is really serious on it. I'm going to buy in. Well, you are just stupid, because those boys are going to wait for all of you to buy in, and then they're just going to wait, and then they're just going to dump. And that's what's happening now. Suckers rally. Don't fall for the trap. Okay, but this is still not horrible news. I mean, for God's sake, look at the one-year return. Even as of today, the one-year return on this stock would have been closed at 525. This morning, it's riding right now, 525. It's riding right now at 791. 525 and 791. So what I would do is I would take for that one real quick here. 791 minus 525 on the buy. If you bought in at 525, there'd be your investment right there real quick. If I run this real quick. Hang on here, bear with me. 791.91 less 5.25 equals 5.25. Wait. 7.91 minus 5.25 equals divided by 5.25. Well, hell. ...50.67% return on it. If you held a year, even off the sucker's rally, if you'd had this for a year, you're ahead of 50% on your investment. The real question is, what was the risk of that at the same time? Because Rite Aid clearly is a fairly risky stock. And a matter of fact, if I have any sense about me, let me step back here a bit. And is there some reason? Oh, okay. Now let me pull back here. Look at the original screen. Okay. Talk to me. What do you see about the risk of this stock? What can you see in that screen that tells you about risk?
Beta is 1.99.
Which means very high. That's a 2. In other words, this thing swings in a well-diversified portfolio. This stock is swinging at 2 times the degree of the market portfolio, of a massive portfolio. This thing is highly sensitive to the market. It's a very, honestly, above 1.4, I consider myself to be risky. At about two, beta of 2. That's a nasty thing. Now, also, it's a little bit hard to see. Well, okay. What do you know about this company's dividend policy? Anything you see about dividend policy? It doesn't have one. So what does that mean Rite Aid has been doing? What does that mean? Which means that what would you expect? High dividend yield or something else? What's that? What is that something else? Don't trifle with me, boy. what do we call it? It's dividend yield and
capital gain
yield. So you should expect this to be a high capital gain yield company. No dividend, you're in for the ride. That's part of what makes it a riskier stock, is that all of your money is on the pony that's going to run the race and not drop candy off along the way. Other interesting things about this is, can you tell me, I don't know if you can see this thing, but is this company profitable right now? It's hard to see on this screen, but it's there. Can you see it? Whether or not this company is actually making a profit right now? I can tell you, I can see it. It is. Where do I see it? Price earnings ratio is a positive number. So in other words, the price divided by the earnings, price per share divided by earnings per share is a positive number. So that tells me, obviously, price is a positive number, so the earnings per share must be a positive number. I don't even have to look at their financials to tell that. The company's making money. That price to earnings ratio is actually very low, surprisingly enough. That P.E. ratio sucks. Well, it doesn't suck. It's just a low P.E. ratio. So now, the upshot of this, Walgreens is actually, if I'm not mistaken, that's an ADR. Walgreens, there. No, that's not what I wanted. What the heck? Equity Munich NASDAQ. Boots. No, come on. Walgreens. Yeah, it's an ADR. All right. But I can't even find an equivalent for it for ours. There's the ADR. Yeah, that's the ADR, it looks like. I may be mistaken about that. Okay, an ADR is a foreign company that has a trading symbol on the New York, on a stock exchange in the United States. You are actually not buying direct equity interest in the company. You're buying like a proxy for equity interest on an American exchange. So in other words, you're not buying ownership in Walgreens so much as you're buying sort of like something that reflects what the ownership would do in the common stock. And of course, interestingly enough, you can't see anything on the stock price chart. That doesn't matter. Walgreens is not something that you might want to invest in. However, there's something else that I would really, if I am an investor and I want to do a little playing, there's something else that would be very interesting for me to look at right now. Something else in this whole mix. What else could I look at? Okay, remember monopolies. Monopolies can charge higher prices by delivering lower output. That's what they do. That's why we tried to stop them, as even in the 1890s, when our government was the best government business could buy. They started trying to do it. They cracked down over and over again. We just gave up in the last 30, 40 years, and now in the last 15, 20 years, we just walked away from trying to stop the monopolies. But if Walgreens buys Rite Aid, you've got more monopoly power, more market power in Walgreens. But what else do you have? Who is Walgreens' competitor? Yes, CVS. CVS is going to benefit from this as much as Walgreens, because there are no longer going to be three companies competing, there will be two. Admittedly, one of them is going to be a much bigger company after it grabs Rite Aid, but at the same time, it's also going to be encumbered with trying to fix and redo the stores and all of that. So maybe it would be worth it to have a look at what CVS is doing to see what the overall market sentiment is about this whole deal. Dear God. I think it's CVS. Huh? Yeah. Nope. That's their subsidiary, I think, CVS. My ass. Is that what it is? Let me try something here. CVS Health Corp. It is CVS Health Corp. Okay. I stand corrected. I was right the first time. Well, spank me Jesus. Okay. CVS. There it is. CVS Health Corp. Look at that. Notice that's a big stock. Okay, talk to me. Volatility. Is that high volatility or low volatility? I'm trying to get you to kind of get a sense. Remember the stock prices there are 100 or so. What do you see as far as volatility goes? Highly volatile or not highly volatile? Talk to me. Very low. That's a very, at a level of 100, those kinds of pops up and down a couple of bucks at a time, that's not very much. When you were talking about $8 stock with Rite Aid, pops like that were really scary as a percentage of the stock price. So this seems to be a low volatility stock. So let's go back and let's have a gander at the beta, see what we see. Well, yeah. See how the beta is lower? It's still, that's still kind of a beta that's up there a bit, but it's definitely a lower beta than the Rite Aid was. Another thing, is this company profitable? Can you see that? Sure is, because PE ratio is positive. Okay. Dividend. Does this company have a dividend policy? Yeah, it does. This company shares its earnings. That in itself will lead to a somewhat lower risk because you know there's money in your hand all the time. It's not just the capital gain yield that's driving your overall total return. There's some of it is in this form of $1.40 a share dividend that you're going to get. That tends to take away some of the risk. Nevertheless, this is actually not such a not a tame stock as far as that beta is concerned. Now, going back here just a little bit, very quickly. You notice that the impact of its competitor, Walgreens, grabbing Rite Aid is relatively modest. It did have a little bit of a spike on it. And here's some people selling their quick gain. Definitely today there's a little bit of that, not much. But notice that the overall view is not strong, and it's also not the, clearly the market isn't saying this is the end of the world for CVS. I saw some analysts saying, well, this is going to really put the pressure on CVS. They're going to be challenged by a seriously bigger competitor in the market. The market itself is saying, no, CVS is not, this isn't really all that much to CVS. And to the extent that it is anything to CVS, it's a good sign because there's going to be less competition. That means higher prices that they can charge in their stores because there won't be a third alternative. People who went to Rite Aid, well, maybe they didn't want to go to Walgreens to begin with. That's why they went to Rite Aid. They're just as likely to go over to CVS now as they are to go to a Rite Aid that's changed its name to Walgreens. That's how you think about these things. Don't ever look at just one stock or the predator and the prey. Don't ever just look at those. Look at the impact on other participants in the industry. In this case, as far as I can see, I'm a little worried there on that neckline. That neckline right there, it tested it, and it didn't, if I'm looking right, it's kind of hard to see, but it didn't cross its neckline and stay on the other side, but it's going to test the neckline again. I'm guessing that there's going to be in the next week, it'll test the neckline again, and I have a feeling it's going to break its neckline, and it'll be a positive, it'll be a buy signal. This is how we think about investments, out in my world anyway. Certainly not in your course, theoretical investments courses here, but this is what you look at, not just one thing. Now, one last thing here is let's look at the return on Rite Aid over a year. Now, 1 year ago, the return was, I'm sorry, the close was 103. I can't even read that. What is that? 103.66. Now, moving to 1 year from then, which is today, well, we could look at the close. I look at close, 103.66. Wait, what? What did I do there? Am I on crack? Why? Oh, okay. Okay, 80. The close was 86.12. Gee, where's 86.12 on the close? 86.12 on the close. 1 year ago. Wow. And then what was it today? What was the close last night? 103.66. 103.66. Yeah. Okay, 103.66. And now, switching back over, and what I'm doing is I'm just showing you how to use these things, these formulas from chapter 11. I'm showing you how to use them in practice, in actual real life itself kind of thing. And if I crank that little puppy out there on my calculator, I would do 103.66 less 86.12, close parentheses, divided by 86.12. Okay. And I get about 20.37% return. What was it for CVS? The return was, I'm sorry, for Rite Aid, the return was 50.67% higher beta. Higher expected return. Return on CVS, lower beta, and a 20.67% lower expected return, lower return. There's that relationship in real life. CVS, higher beta, higher risk. You saw the volatility of that stock. Yeah, 50% historical return. CVS, lower beta, lower volatility, and a lower expected return, 20.67%. The real question is not, well, is Rite Aid a better investment than CVS? The question is, how much risk are you willing to tolerate? Because remember, with greater risk comes greater expected return, but also greater volatility. So as easily as Rite Aid could go up next year by 50%, it could also go down next year by 50% if all hell breaks loose in trying to do the reorg of Rite Aid that Walgreens imagines that it can do. With CVS, it's got no troubled waters. It's not going to try to bring in some wayward child and clean it up and make it spiffy. CVS is just going to keep growing and going on its own path. So it's lower risk, lower expected return, but also less likelihood of a real bad surprise in the coming year. That's all I have for you. Go home.